And welcome back to your extended news at noon. I'm Tracy Morgan. So we're going to take a few minutes today and get another check-in with the Butler Health System about where we are right now with COVID-19, the vaccines, and some information that we've received from the hospital in the way of numbers and stats. With me on the phone today is Dr. Michael Farina, and he is the Vice President of Medical Education. I know you probably know his name from his family practice for 23 years, but he has moved into this new position. So, Dr. Farina, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And we will have another discussion about your move into your new position. So if folks just heard that news and they're wondering why I'm not asking you, we will take a longer time at a different opportunity with you. Today, I just wanted to focus on COVID and the vaccines and go down that path, if you don't mind. And I'm wondering, first off, your opinion on the mask announcement, if you will, on outdoors and how if we're in a large crowd, we don't have to wear masks anymore. I'm just wondering your opinion because it just feels like the world is moving on, but I'm not sure the hospital workers have any break in this.
No, I think that's a real accurate statement. I think there's a few layers to that answer. I think one of the layers is the healthcare system and the government is trying to incentivize people to get the vaccine to show, hey, if you have the vaccine, you're much less likely to be a carrier, to be transmissible. You're much less likely to get sick. So if you have the vaccine, there is a benefit to it and there is a reward to it. That being said, it's an extremely accurate statement. This is not over, and it's not going to be over unless we as a community and a society do the right things to bring this to an end.
So what's your suggestion, your thought, your opinions on the fact that if we stop wearing masks at different locales or events or venues, how do we bring it to an end? Because it just feels like a cycle that if you don't break that cycle, we're just not going to get out of this.
Well, you know, I tell people we don't live in a perfect world. That's an obvious statement. The analogy that I always use with my patients is wearing a seatbelt. I think most people wear seatbelts, but I think we also understand that if you wear a seatbelt, you don't have a 100% guarantee of not getting injured or not dying in a car accident. But it does help. It does improve your risk of getting severely injured. It does not. It does improve your risk of dying. It's the same thing with the vaccine. Nobody once ever said that these vaccines are perfect. They're pretty darn good, Pfizer and Moderna, with 94-95% success rates. But they aren't perfect, and you can always look for the exception to the rule. You know, there's somebody who may get in a car accident who is wearing a seatbelt, and maybe they were in a lake or the car caught in fire, and they died because they couldn't get the seatbelt out. Does that mean that all seatbelts cause death? No, that's a ridiculous statement. It's kind of the same thing with the vaccines. You can point out to the one person or a small segment of people who may have an issue with the vaccine, but the vast majority of people do receive protection from these. And, you know, I think by encouraging people to get the vaccine to reduce some of the restrictions that are out there, again, is a way to incentivize it. So do I think it's a perfect solution? Absolutely not. But I think these are well-intentioned, and I think if enough people do the right thing, then it will allow us to move by this point that we're at today.
Recently, we got some information from the hospital recently, meaning this week, and I date some of our interviews because if folks are listening to these interviews on our podcast, on our website, I don't want the information to be outdated without them knowing when we're talking to you. So we are talking to you today on Wednesday, April 28th. Now, that being said, we got recent information from the hospital where it broke down the numbers of people being hospitalized versus those that are in the ICU, those who have been vaccinated versus those who have not. What are you seeing? Can you go through that information for us?
Yes, absolutely. Since February 1st, there were 140 admissions to the hospital. Out of those 140 admissions, there were three patients who were fully vaccinated. So if you want to do the math, 3 divided by 140, 2% of vaccinated people were admitted. And again, much like the seatbelt analogy, it is not perfect, but that also means that 98% of the admissions were people who were unvaccinated. There were 20 deaths. Out of those 20 deaths, one person was fully vaccinated. The other 19 were not. And 1 divided by 20 is 5%, which again goes back to the statistics that Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are 95% effective. So what we're seeing locally seems to be playing out on par with what we're seeing nationally and internationally with these vaccines. Again, perfection is something that, you know, I don't think many people reach, but the numbers that we're seeing locally do show that the vaccine does give you protection.
So basically those numbers are saying that the majority of people who are being hospitalized or end up in the ICU at this point or since February 1st, they're unvaccinated individuals.
Absolutely. It is not 100%, but it is the vast majority of people are either unvaccinated or partially vaccinated. Maybe they only received one vaccine at the time.
What is the general overall sense of patients' thoughts? Do they believe in the virus? Do they not believe it's factual? Are they hesitant to get the vaccine? What are you all seeing at the hospital? Are they giving you any kind of feedback?
Yeah, it's hard to paint with a broad brush because, I mean, I think there's some people who have a political statement or you know, twist on things, and certainly that's something that is prevalent in society. Some people just have real intelligent and legitimate concerns. You know, they will point out that the vaccine hasn't been out very long, and we don't know what the vaccine does in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. My answer to that, because I do think that's an intelligent question, is that we don't know what the disease does in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. In my clinical practice, when I was seeing patients, you know, we're calling it the long haulers or the long COVID. I saw dozens of people who had COVID and maybe mild, you know, symptoms where they weren't hospitalized, they stayed at home for a week or two. But these people are coming in and they're short of breath, they have brain fog, they have headaches, they have fatigue, they get dizzy. You know, people say, well, it's just a bad flu. There are people now that have had that bad flu that months later are developing heart and lung issues. The lungs get stiff and hard and fibrous tissue forms. It's called pulmonary fibrosis. There's people who get inflammation of the heart tissue. It's called myocarditis or cardiomyopathy. And these are real things that we're seeing and we're documenting. So while we don't know what the vaccine does 3 years from now, and guess what? No one ever going to be able to tell you that until the time comes. What we are seeing is there's a segment of people who have even mild cases of COVID and they're paying for it months later with some relatively bad issues. So I think, you know, the risk of the vaccine versus the risk of the disease, the risk of the disease is really playing out to be the much greater risk between the two.
And I'm sure you've seen a lot with your family practice that you had for 23 years. So in your description that you just gave, would you sit back and say, yeah, this is different?
Oh, absolutely. It's different. These people are definitely a lot more ill, it's a whole consortium of symptoms. And the problem is, since this disease is still relatively new, we really don't know how to treat it. You know, we don't know exactly for these people with long COVID or long haulers, you know, all the pathophysiology behind it. And that's going to take some time to tease out about how exactly do you help address these people's problems.
I want to speak about variants for a moment, if you don't mind. We've talked to Dr. Love, we've talked to Dr. Rottinghouse many times about these issues, and Dr. Love was trying to walk us through how it would have to be tested, like a variant would have to be tested for, and the length of time that would take. If you're still seeing patients being vaccinated and ending up in the hospital, is the hospital just assuming that they're a variant at this point? Has the hospital discovered any variants at this point? What's your thought about the variants?
Well, you know, first of all, I had a really smart mentor one day. You know, he told me assumption is the mother of all mistakes. So I don't think we're assuming anything. The problem with testing for variants is a few things. It requires what's called gene sequencing or DNA sequencing testing. First of all, that testing is extremely expensive. Second thing is it takes a lot of time. And the third thing, it doesn't change the treatment at all. You know, whether you're in the hospital, whether you're in the ICU, it doesn't change what you're going to do. So to be honest with you, here at Butler, we're not routinely testing for variants, and I don't really know any community hospital that is. That's something that's done more in like the academic centers, maybe down at Pitt, you know, Penn in Philadelphia, what have you. And that's mostly just for the epidemiologist to track, you know, what's going on with the virus. But while we don't know if it's the variants that are causing problems locally, I think what that points to in my mind is the need for people to get vaccinated quickly. When you have a significant amount of the population that's not vaccinated, this virus stays in the communities and has an opportunity to mutate or to become a variant. And then what happens is the vaccine, which was wildly successful, it's going to lose its efficacy. And what's going to happen is it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. These people would say, well, the vaccine doesn't work, or I don't want the vaccine. They're kind of making things come true because you're giving the virus a chance to change. Again, I know we don't live in an ideal world, but in an ideal world, 6 months ago, we would have been able to give every person on the planet the vaccine all in one day, and that would have been the most effective way of shutting this down. And I don't think there was ever a big push to do that because, number one, we couldn't produce, you know, 7 billion vaccines, and we couldn't get everybody to have the vaccine all done in one day. So, you know, we kind of rolled out the vaccine as it became available. We're kind of past that point now. We have enough vaccine. People who are saying, hey, I'm going to wait another 3 months, 6 months, 1 year to see how things go, if there's any more problems that pop up, you're giving the vaccine a chance to mutate, and you're going to make make it come true that we're not going to get beyond this, and we're still going to be wearing masks, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, which I kind of know everybody's sick of doing.
Right. If somebody gets COVID, whether that's before or after being vaccinated, how long do they have to wait before they actually get a shot? Should they wait 3 months? Do they wait 2 weeks? How long is that time?
There's a little element of gray in that answer. When this first started with the vaccines, we were telling people wait 90 days because your body had enough antibodies that you had some natural immunity. There were not a lot of people who got COVID twice, but there were some people. So, you know, waiting 90 days gave others a chance to get the vaccine because the vaccine was in short supply. We don't have that problem anymore. So the general thought is once you have COVID, as long as you're symptom-free and you quarantined and you're not going to go to the vaccine center and get other people sick, go and get the shot done. Now, there are some current studies that are being done that, you know, does waiting an extra 4 weeks, 6 weeks, does that give you higher antibody levels? I don't think anybody knows the exact answer. But, you know, 3 months ago when there weren't enough vaccines, if you had COVID, we told people, hey, just wait 3 months so other people can get the shot who are in need. We don't have that issue anymore. So I would tell you, if you've had COVID and you're symptom-free and you're quarantined and you're not going to go to the vaccine center and get other people sick, please go and get your shot.
Well, let me ask this question a little bit different. If somebody gets COVID, should they get the shot, period? Because I've heard people say, I've had COVID, so I have antibodies, so I'm good to go. So now whether they wanted to go get the vaccine or not, that wasn't a part of that part of the conversation, but there was that feel of I'm clear, if you will, because I've already had COVID.
Yeah, and the problem is that we're seeing people who've had natural COVID get it a second time, and that means that the levels of antibodies are decreasing. We haven't had really any sign of that with the vaccine at this point. The vaccine antibodies seem to be sustainable. Now, again, how long? Well, that's where research is going to have to come in to tell us that. But, you know, I think when you're talking about boosters, the biggest fear is if we give this virus a chance to make new variants, then we're going to have to tweak the vaccine, then we're going to have to give boosters. So even if you've had COVID, we don't know how long your natural antibodies are going to last. You should still get the shot because the antibodies made by the vaccine seem to be much superior.
Talk about the vaccine clinic, if you don't mind. I know this week we also got news from you that we relayed to the public that you have walk-ins available and scheduling an appointment is preferred, but you can go between 9 and 3. Can you cover all of that for us, if you don't mind?
Oh, absolutely. So the vaccine clinic, you know, when it first opened up, the response was overwhelming, and I really want to compliment the people who ran the vaccine clinic. Again, it wasn't perfect. There were some hiccups, and, you know, we learned as we went, but they did a wonderful job at getting people moved in and out. While initially all the slots got filled relatively quickly, we're now at the point where we have a lot of openings. I know Monday I sat in on a meeting and we had 4,100 open slots for this week. So we can handle people coming in. We would prefer for people to make an appointment because when you make an appointment, you're much less likely to have a waiting time. That being said, we have enough open slots that if you're just going to show up, we will accommodate you. We will do everything we can to get the vaccine in your arm. So right now, there are open slots to sign up. If you go to the Butler Health System's website, it's relatively painless and easy to sign up, but even if you don't, if you show up, we will give you the vaccine.
And folks, I'll remind you again in our story, just to clarify, when we said walk-ups would be between 9 and 3, there are appointments outside of that time frame. So you can go earlier, you can go later. It's not just between 9 and 3 that you can get the shot. That would be the walk-in time. So they have enough shots to be able to give throughout the day. So just keep that in mind. Again, we have the link on our website as well, butlerradio.com, or just go to the Butler Health System and you have the calendar there that you can schedule out for the next couple of days. And Dr. Farina, I don't want to get ahead of any kind of announcement, but as I'm on the calendar right now, I see April. If I click to May, it says no availability. Do you know if that clinic will continue into May or what are the plans?
That's something that we're looking at right now because to staff the clinic, I mean, it's an expensive endeavor and we don't want to have, you know, dozens of nurses and staff sitting there staring at each other if nobody is going to show up, because honestly, you know, that's price prohibitive.
Right.
Is the clinic still going to be available in May? Absolutely. But there needs to be a demand for it. So we are talking about, you know, Saturday hours for people on weekends. But to staff a clinic with the nurses, with pharmacists, it's a pretty expensive proposition to do. And if there's a demand for it, the demand will be met. But again, if we're only having, you know, 15, 20 people come in over the course of 12 hours, you can't realistically do that. So there's plenty of open slots this week. Please fill them up. Actually, today we're going to talk about what we're going to do come in May. And if there's a demand, I'll drive to your house myself if I have to give you the shot, and I'll sit and wait there for 15 minutes. But If there's no demand, we can't just have a bunch of people sitting around doing nothing.
Right. And one more question for you, if you don't mind. Is the hospital seeing people not make their second shot? I've been hearing that throughout the country, not necessarily in our area, and I'm not sure what you're seeing at the Butler Health System. And I'll follow it up with this. How important is that second shot when you have a two-shot system?
To be honest with you, around here, that's been very rare. We've been very thankful that the people who've got their first shots have come back for their second shot. So locally, it has not been as big of an issue as it is elsewhere. I have read that too. Second of all, it's very important. The first shot kind of primes the pump. You do get antibodies, you do get benefit, but number one, you don't get nearly as many antibodies. They might not be as strong and they might not last as long. The second shot is kind of the game changer, where your immune system is up and ready to go. And I think that's why, and I just know my personal experience, my first shot felt like someone punched me. My arm hurt, was sore for a day, maybe a day and a half. Second shot, I admit it, I felt cruddy for 24 hours. I had a little bit of chills, I had a little bit of, you know, muscle aches. But that was a sign that my immune system was jacked up and ready to go. So I think getting both shots is extremely important. And we're aware, you may feel cruddy for a day, and then I'm sorry and I apologize, but I'd rather you feel cruddy for a day than dying from this. You know, a lot of the people who are against the shot or talking about it, they're not the ones who have to care for the people. They're not the ones who have to clean up the mess. We just at the hospital last week had a 19-year-old pass away. Now, that's the exception, but I tell you what, it affected the caregivers pretty deeply. And you know, if you don't want to get the shot, I don't think I'll understand it, but I'll respect it. But those who are, you know, pushing for others not to get the shot, I would invite them to come and walk in the ICU with me and see what someone on a ventilator or getting ECMO, you know, looks like. I'd invite them to make the phone call to the family saying that, hey, you know, Pap died. It's not easy, and it takes something out of you. So I think the healthcare workers here, you know, just unbelievable people. I can't tell you how honored I am to be associated with them, but they need your help. And in order to do the right thing for the community, you may have to inconvenience yourself a little bit. You may have to get a shot that'll make you feel cruddy for a day. And I think we all feel bad about that, but I think there's a greater good that we need to keep our eye on. You know, there's a great book by Tom Brokaw called The Greatest Generation that talked about all the sacrifices that people made during the Great Depression and during World War II. And right now, I think we as a community have to make some sacrifices for each other for the greater good of this community. And I appreciate people listening to this. And I, you know, any way we can convince people to get this vaccine, I want to contribute to that.
And I thank you for mentioning what you just did, because I think it's hard for us to understand somebody else's shoes if we're not walking in them. And I know we're all sick of the masks, and I know we're all sick of this, but we're not in your shoes. You know, we don't know what that's like if we're not nurses and doctors trying to save lives. And this just continues. Like I said at the beginning of our conversation, while it feels like the world is moving on, you guys haven't gotten a break and you still don't get a break. And I think that's why, for me personally, I've just been wanting to continue these interviews to talk with you all, because we don't get that perspective as much as I think we should. So I appreciate you sharing what you can. I know you have HIPAA laws, so we can't go into details, but I do appreciate your perspective on that, because I can't imagine not getting a break from this.
Well, like I said, the people here are just amazing at the level of care and level of compassion that they've shown, but they're not going to win this battle on their own. They're just not. It got to be an all hands on deck type of thing. So you might think you getting your shot isn't a big deal. Trust me. If we can, you know, make less people likely to carry this, less people likely to transmit it, that's how we're going to beat it. So I realize this isn't a perfect, you know, situation. And when people bring up points, there's validity to them, and they should be heard, and they should have a chance to ask these questions. But, you know, I think you just really need to put aside any political beliefs. I think you need to put aside any, you know, personal vendettas or other things that you might have, and just ask what's for the greater good of this community that we live in. And I think getting the vaccines the right answer. So my opinion, I'm happy to talk to whoever wants about it. And, you know, if they want to point out what I'm wrong about, I'm happy to listen.
Dr. Michael Farina with the Butler Health System, Vice President of Medical Education. Thank you so much for your time.
I really appreciate your time and the venue. Thank you so much.